All right, we begin here on the top of Hey Amud Aleph, but the Mishnah. The Mishnah is familiar to us because the Mara quoted it earlier. Mishal Shin Be Mamon Be Mishal Shin Be Makot. When it comes to Edim Zomimim, if they are incriminated about a monetary case, then the Edim themselves can split between them the total amount that they were trying to be Mechayev, the victim. Be Mishal Shin Be Makot. But when it comes to Makot, each one of them has to get the amount that they intended for that party. If they came to testify that so-and-so was obligated to pay 200 zuz, and then they were found to be edim zomamim, mishalshin b'nehem, then they split it between them. We saw the different perushim and rashi as to what the word mishalshin means, whether it means that speaking about three and it's a third each, but that's just an example, or whether it's from the word shlish, somebody who is a trustee or who is a messenger on their behalf, like the Beit Din, who's going to collect all the money and aggregate it on their behalf. But it means that the Edim share in the burden of the monetary obligation they were going to cause him. And there are questions in the Achronim as to whether when one of the Edim disappears, whether that's because he died, he doesn't show up, do the other two Edim have to cover the amount? Is the idea that you have to get to the total amount between whoever is present? Or is it that you share in the burden anybody who would have been a Baal Din over here, and that means if one of them is missing, then they only pay the two-thirds, and the third one we'll deal with when we can, or if he passed away, that's a loss. About imidu shukhayav malkot, on the other hand, if they testified, for whatever reason it is, that this person is subject to malkot, 40 lashes, and then they're found to be edim zomamim, kolachad, ve'echad loke arbaim. Each one of them gets arbaim malkot, either because you can't split it up, which is that it's not a divisible item. When it comes to money, you can divide up the money amongst the Edim. When it comes to Malkot, you can't divide them up. Part of that is because the intended punishment they wanted to give to this guy was 40 Malkot. It's not the same for each one of them to get a third of the 40. It's really 39, so they'd each get 13 set Malkot. Because that's not really kasher mazamam lasot le'achiv. They're going to get this light punishment when they were trying to impose a much heavier punishment on him. And so the only way to accomplish kasher mazamam lasot le'achiv is for each one of them to suffer the same amount of pain they would have inflicted upon the victim, which is to get the full amount of malkot. On the other hand, when it comes to the money, we're speaking about a monetary loss that would have been cost to him. If they, on an aggregate basis, pay him back the loss that they intended to cause him, then in that sense, they've replaced whatever they thought they were going to do to him. And for that reason, it's different for Malkot than it is for Mamon. How do we know this? Amar Abaye, Nema Rasha v'chayvei Malkiot, Nema Rasha v'chayvei Mitot Beitin. Because the word Rasha appears by Chayvei Malkot, it's corporal punishment. It says, Im bin hakot ha-rasha. And it also appears by Chayvei Mitot, it's the death penalty. It says, Ashuhu Rasha Lamut. This is a Gzeirah Shavah that comes up numerous times. Mala halan, ein mita l'mechsa. Afkan, ein malkot l'mechsa. Just like death cannot be divided, so too malkot can't be divided. There is a difference. Death cannot physically be divided up. You can't give a partial death to the Edim to add up to the total death of the individual. Mita is, by definition, indivisible. On the other hand, malkot are a divisible item. But here you have a Gzeirah Shavah, a case that is Efshar from Efshar. That you'll see already in the Masorat HaShas, already goes from other places in Shas, where Tosafot speaks about this. And there's an issue of having a limud from something that is Efshar to something that is Efshar. How can you extrapolate from something where it's impossible to something where there is a possible way to break it down? But that might be the Ikar answer over here, is that it's a Gzeirah Shavah. A Gzeirah Shavah, as opposed to other types of limudim, can contravene logic. It does not have to conform to the normal procedures of limud or svara of limud. And therefore, the Gzeirah Shavah is exactly that, a Gzeirah Takatuv, that says there is some connection between them, even though there wouldn't have been a natural connection between them logically. And so for that reason, we think there is a Gzeirah Shavah, despite the fact that it's Efshar from Efshar. Rava Amar, Be'inan, kasher zamam lasot le'achiv v'leka. Rava says that we need to do or give retribution to the individual based on what they were attempting to do. And you don't have that with regards to Malkot, if you split it up like we already described. Iachi mamonami. That should be the same thing by monetary compensation. Mamon mitzdareif. Malkot lo mitzdareif. Money can be aggregated and then fill in the entire loss that they were trying to create. Malkot can't be aggregated in order to fill in what they were attempting to do this individual. Again, for the reasons that we stated, that it's different to give someone 13 and then add up 13, 13, 13 to get to 39 versus one person who gets 39. Or the fact that the Malkot are not a monetary compensation or any form of compensation to the victim who they testified against, as opposed to money, which is trying to make reparations for the loss that they were going to cause him. And therefore, the Malkot come in a block. There's no such thing as a partial Malkot where it can be added up to get you to the final number. There is a fixed number of Malkot that you are given, and therefore you can't add other Malkiot to it because it's all about a single individual and their relationship to the Malkot. So first of all, Rava might be arguing on the reasoning brought by Abaye, which is he might say that even though it's a Gezer Shava, you can't learn out Efshar from Efshar. And that might be what leads Rava to give an alternate answer to the Gezer Shava of Rasha Rasha. Now, what you're asking about is true, that we will see later in the Masechta, that when it comes to giving corporal punishment, we don't necessarily give him 39, we actually have to assess how much the person can handle out of the 39 Malkot, and then we give him to that number, because you're not allowed to kill him through the Malkot. So you have to do it to the point where he would suffer, but not necessarily die from it. That means that we would make that same assessment for each individual over here, because if one person can take 39, and another person can only take 21, for him, those 21 could be equal to the 39 of the other individual. So in that way, each person is getting the same punishment that they intended, even though the number of Malkot are different. And vice versa. If the original person is supposed to get 39, and they would have only given him 21, then the others get not just 21, they'll get whatever they can take out of the full 39, again, so that it's on par with the punishment. The reduced amount of Malkiot is not because it's a lighter sentence or it's a lighter violation. It all has to do with what the person can handle. And that is something that can be done on a relative basis so that everybody ends up with the same thing, even though the numbers might be different. Okay, the next Mishnah. Ein ha'edim nasim zomamim, ad she'azimu et atzman. Edim zomamim are not made into edim zomamim until they are hazama affects themselves. As Rashi notes over here, she hazimu otam iskei gufan, that they're going to make them or incriminate them about themselves. Velo, and not with the iskei horeg v'harug, and not about the killer or the victim. So the incrimination of the edim zomamim relates to they themselves and not to the case itself. It's the difference between an argument about facts versus something that is said about they themselves. And we know that because there's a difference between edei hachasha, where edim come and disagree with them about the facts of the case, and that is an edut mukheshet. We don't kill them, there's no din of hazama there. There's a argument between edim. On the other hand, when edim come and mir mizameim them, when they come along and say, manu ha'itim, you were with us, then they are made into edim zomamim, and then we do to them like they had planned to do the others. That's because the second city of Edim are not arguing them about the facts. They're simply saying that you yourselves are problematic. Since you are problematic, you're going to be held accountable. So the atzmam over here could either be that they're testifying about the Edim themselves, or the atzmam could be they find that the sheker, the lie, is about themselves. It's not a lie necessarily about the facts of the case. It's a lie about the fact that they were ever there or ever present to tell us about the facts of the case. And if you look in the Rabbeinu Chananel, he quotes from the Geonim that it means, Ad she'yacharishu v'lo yachishem muzmin et ha-mizamin. That it's a case where they remain silent and they do not disagree with the claim of the edim that are coming to make them into edim zomamim. So there's not hachasha here. There's simply a statement by the others. Their silence then becomes acquiescence, and we assume that they are edim zomamim. And that's what it means, that they have to be mezim atzmam. Their silence now is what's incriminating them. Ketzad, amru me'edim anu bishploni, sharag et ha-nefesh. Edim come along and say, we testified that so-and-so was a murderer. Amru lahem, heyach etem edim, how could you testify about that? Shrei ne'arag zeh, ohoreg zeh haya imanu, oto ayom. v'makom ploni, because the murderer or the victim was with us on that day in this place. So how is it possible that you could testify about these individuals? Ein elu zomamim. Those are not edim zomamim. Those are edei hakasha. They're disagreeing about the facts. Was the murderer there on that day? Or was the murderer not there on that day? Was the victim there on that day? Not there on that day? The two sets of edim argue about those facts. That is edut hakasha. That's a disagreement about the facts of the case. Aval amru lahem, ha'ech atem edim shari atem ha'itim imanu oto yom b'makom ploti. How could you testify about this case? Because you, the Edim, were with us in such and such a place on that day. So, Arei Elu Zomamim B'nei Ragim Al-Piyem. Those are considered to be Edim Zomamim, and they will be put to death as Edim Zomamim, since they were claiming this individual was a murderer when he wasn't. But they are incriminated by the fact, not that someone's arguing on what they said, they're simply saying you couldn't say, or you'd be Edim in this case, because you're with us in some place on that day. Bau acherim vizimum, bau acherim vizimum, afilu meya, even up to 100, kulam yorgu. All of them are put to death. Now, what exactly the case is not clear. Rashi over here, and it's almost kimat, all the Rishonim say the same thing, but doesn't read in the simple way of the Mishnah, which is, there's a single set of Edim, and every time a new set of Edim comes along, they say, Imanu Aitim, you were with us. So one set of Edim takes out 100 Kita Edim. One after the next, they come in and they say, we saw this guy murder this victim. This set of Edim comes along and says, how could you, Imanu Aitim? Next set of Edim come in and testify that this person murdered the victim on such and such a day, and this is what happened. That same set of Edim comes along and says, you couldn't testify, Imanu Aitim. And they do this 100 times. Every set of Edim that shows up, they say, Imanu Aitim. So that's not the simplest way to read the Mishnah, but that's the way that Rashi and all the Rishonim describe the case in the Mishnah. The simpler way to read the Mishnah, which is actually the explanation that's brought by the Geonim and rejected by the Rif and others as being the improper explanation, is that you have here alternating sets of Edim, which is the first set of Edim come in and testify about the murder. The second set of Edim come along and say about the first, Imanu Aitim. The third set of Edim comes along and says, cut number two, how can you testify about cut number one? Imanu Aitim, you, cut number two, with us, cut number three. Then cut number four comes along and says, wait a minute, number three, how could you testify about number two? You were with us on that day, number three. And then so on and so forth until you get 100 Edim, each one incriminating the previous set that had testified and saying, Imanu Aitim. So that actually fits nicely into the language of the Mishnah. The problem that we have is, Kulam yaragu. They all are put to death. That would not be true in the case that the Gaonim are speaking about. In the case that Rashi and the other Rishonim are speaking about, all the Edim would be put to death. There's one set of Edim, that each time someone comes in, they say, Imanu Aitim, and therefore they can put all of them to death. In the case that the Gaonim describe, it actually becomes a daisy chain, because as each one incriminates the one in front of them, they not only affect that group, but they affect the alternating group in front of them, which is that each one testified about the previous group, then when they are incriminated, that makes that the group in front of them was not incriminated. If they're not incriminated, that means that the group that was in front of them actually gets put to death. But when they're put to death, then the group that they said about it won't be put to death. That means every other set of Edim would be put to death, and not all of them. And that's part of the problem, because the Mishnah says they all get put to death. In the case that we describe, it's a daisy chain by which you have even and odd numbers, and then if it is an odd number that comes along as the last one to speak, then all the odd numbered Edim would be fine. All the even numbers would be put to death, and vice versa. If the last one to come is an even number, then all the even numbers would be okay, and all the odd numbers would have to be put to death. But you wouldn't say, Kulam Yargu, all of them are put to death. So that's part of the problem with that view or that girsa. Rav Yehuda Omer, istatit hi zo. Rashi explains istatit from the word stia, someone who deviates. That this is clearly not a proper set of Edim. These are people who are deviant in their behavior. What they're doing is deviant, because you're never going to have a set of Edim that had every person that walks into the court was with them on the day that they claimed that the murder took place. It casts aspersions on their testimony, or their testimony is questionable. Others say that the word istatip comes from the word istis, which is a type of dye. And he's saying that they are dying everybody who comes into contact with them. Similar to when you put something in a cauldron with dye, the dye affects the whole thing that's put in there, anything it touches, it colors. So too, this set of edim, anybody who comes here, they are coloring or they're dying, means that they're incriminating them. So that's what it means, istatit. Whatever it is, it really means here that you have a cabal of plotters here who are treasonous in nature, which is that they're coming and incriminating everybody because clearly they're trying to protect the murderer in this case and not because they're telling the truth. Veinu ne'rag elakat rishonah bilvad. And the only group that's put to death is the first group. And we'll have to see why in the Gemara the first group is put to death. But let's just assume that when they testified about the first group, that was the first set. We believe them by regards to the first set. It's only once they start coming up with every other set that we start to question the motives behind what they're doing, because now they're adding on top of the first set that they said Imanu Eitem. Where do we know this from, that Edei HaZamah is about the Edim themselves and not about the facts of the case? Amar Rav Ada, Damar Kra, the Pasuk says, Rene Ed Sheker Eid, Sheker Ana Be'achiv. So the Pasuk has the word Sheker twice in it. And so it seems to be that there is an extraneous sheker, and that extraneous sheker tells us that it has to be something that's inherently sheker. Not something where they're saying something that is a falsehood, but where inherently the edim themselves are sheker. That's one way to look at it. Or the fact that it says, Hinei eid sheker ha'eid, says that the sheker is about the edim and not the edut, and that's why the pasuk uses the term eid instead of edut, show you that we're speaking about them and not about the case that they are speaking about. It's one of those two reasons they learn from this pasuk that the sheker, ashet tishaker gufa shel edut, until the edut, the testimony itself, is undermined. Not, again, the facts of the testimony, but the fact that there is a testimony at all is being undermined in this case because they were never present, not because there's a question about the facts that they are stating. The Beir Rav Yishmael Tana, Anot Bo Sarah, Ashet Tisara Gufa Shel Edut. Until there's, that the Edut itself is taken away, removed, or caused to deviate from what it was. So again here, the focus is either on Bo, which is extraneous in the Pasuk, because we know who the subject of the Pasuk is, and to say Bo is extraneous would mean them, themselves. That's one way to learn it. Or the word Lanopo Sarah, that the word Sarah tells you that, not that what they were saying was problematic, but they were Sarah. They went off. And that is that they weren't there. We're talking about the Edim themselves and not about the facts that they're speaking about. So now, Amar Rava, we're going to have a statement of Rava almost at the bottom of the Amud here, describing situations about Edim Zomimim. In some of the cases, the Edim Zomimim are considered to be Edim Zomimim. In other cases, they are not. Amar Rava, Bo Shnayim Ve'amru B'Mizbach Bira Harag Ploni Et HaNefesh. They come along and they testify that on the eastern side of the capital city, eastern side of this location, there was a murder. Bo Shnayim Ve'amru Alo B'Mara Bira Imanu Ha'item. How could it be that you were testifying about the murder on the eastern side of town? You were with us on the western side of town at the time that you're saying the murder took place. Kazina. If the case is that when you're on the western side of the city, or if the bira here means some sort of building, if you're on the western side, you can see what is going on the eastern side. Then by the fact that you say you were with us on the west, doesn't preclude the fact that they could have seen the murder in the east. So as long as they have the ability to see to the east, or they have visibility to there, that just because they're in the west doesn't disqualify their testimony about what happened in the east. V'imlaf, if not, harielu zomamim. Then they are considered to be edim zomamim because that's the case of Imanu Eitem. You were with us in the west, and you couldn't have been in the east at the time, and you can't see the east at the time. It says, pshita, that's exactly what we'd have thought. If Rava didn't tell us that, we would have figured that out ourselves, because it's obvious. If they can see from one place to the other, then of course they're not Edim Zomimim. If they can't see, then they are Edim Zomimim. Mao de Tema, what I would have thought, Lichush the Nahora Baria. We should worry about, we'll call it X-ray vision. Super sight, there's a possibility that even though normal people couldn't see from this location to the other location, maybe these individuals are gifted in their sight. Whether that means that they have x-ray vision and they can see through things or past things, whether that means that they just have great distance sight and they would be able to see further than everyone else, Kamash Malan, that we don't say that. We don't assume that they have some superpowers or they have some vision that is better than what average people have. Now, obviously, they can prove that it's something different, but we're not going to make the assumption that people have such vision. Amar Rava, Boshnaim Amru, Besura, Betzafra, in Surah, in the morning, Bechad Beshabta, on Sunday, Harag Ploni at the Nefesh, there was a murder. Ubao Shnaim Amru, and they have two other Edim coming and saying, Bepanya, Bechad Beshabta, in the afternoon, on Sunday, Imanu Aitim in Narada. You were with us in Narada. So they don't make a claim that at the same time you were with us, so you can't testify about the murder. They just say, within a reasonable amount of time, from the time of the murder, you were with us in this other place, and there's no way you could have gotten from one place to the other in that amount of time. And that's what we say, Chazina. Im itzafra lepanyo, if from the morning to the afternoon, matzi azel misura lenardo, you could make that trip from Surah to Narada, lo abazomumim. Then of course not zomumim because both facts could be true. And just because they were in Narada in the afternoon doesn't mean they couldn't be in Surah in the morning. Bilav, if it's impossible to make it, habazomumim, then they are zomumim because the imanoitim by definition precludes their ability to be there at the site of the murder because they were somewhere else that afternoon. Pshita, again, we could have come to this conclusion on our own. There's nothing here that's a big chiddush. Again, ma'u detema lichush the gamla parcha. Let us worry about the way that the Gemara's term is a flying camel, like a magic carpet, or they had a super speed train, some sort of means of transportation that would exceed the normal time duration that it would take to get there. Kamash malan, that we don't worry about that. Both these cases, it seems like, not that these things are impossible, they're just that edge between something that's plausible versus something that would be completely impossible. So there are maybe rare circumstances where someone could do this, or you could find someone of super speed or a camel that was flying. Whatever it is that could accomplish this is very rare. So the question is, do we worry about that? The answer is no. We don't worry about that. L.A.M. Kane, they did make such a claim that we had this type of transportation, we had this type of vision and we can't see. So then obviously we'd have to check it out. But we're not going to make a claim on their behalf. And we're not going to be choshesh for that, even though these are dinei nefashot, and maybe you should be dan l'schut, or to just assume everything to the merit of the individuals. Here we will not do that. That is in contrast to the situation in the Gemara in Yevamot, which you can see is cross-referenced over here with regards to the Gamla Parcha, where the Gemara there says we are choshesh, the Gamla Parcha. So why over there are we choshesh and not over here? The answer that most Rishonim give is that the case in the Gemara in Yevamot, Gamla Parcha is one of a number of items that altogether were mitzdareif to say that possibly this could have happened. It's not the only thing or the single reason that we would believe them. It's because that together with other reasons are mitzdareif to say that. Over here, you would have to rely on this Gamla Parcha. That's your entire claim, that the Gamla Parcha got you there. If it's the entire claim, that's not a claim that we're going to accept. So what he said, if it's a sniff, it is an addendum to other claims, then maybe we would consider it. But if it is the sole claim that you're making, we can't rely on that. We can't think of that as being a reasonable assumption to make on behalf of the Edim. Amar Rava, Bo Shnaim Amru B'chad B'Shabta, Harag Ploni at the Nefesh. Two individuals come and testify that this person murdered on Sunday. Bo Shnaim, and then another set of Edim come, Amru Imanu Aitem B'chad B'Shabta. You were with us on Sunday, so obviously you couldn't testify about the murder. Ella betrayed B'Shabta Harag Ploni at the Nefesh. But on Monday, he actually did kill, and there was a murder. Blowout. Ella afilo amru Erev Shabbat Harag Ploni at the Nefesh. Even at the second set of Edim say the murder took place on Friday, which means prior to when the Edim who falsely testified said there was a murder. Neragin. In that case, the Edim, or the Edim Zomimim were put to death. Because at the moment that they testified about the individual, he was not a walking dead man. He was not already considered to be on death row. So my kamash malon, what is he teaching us? Tanina, We already have that in our Mishnah's upcoming. If we find there are two sets of Edim testifying about a murder, one set of Edim is found to be Zomamim, who Vehein Neragim. The set of Edim that are found to be Zomamim are put to death, and the murderer himself is put to death. Vashniyap Turan. Another set of Edim, they're the ones who put the murderer to death, and they're also Turan, means that they're not subject to being Edim Zomamim, even though the other set were made into Edim Zomamim. Or, if after the fact we find out that they were also Edim Zomamim, they are Patura, because then it is Kasher Asa, and not Kasher Zamam. So that Mishnah makes it clear that you can have a case where the murderer is put to death, and yet the Edim Zomamim are also put to the death. So it doesn't matter whether and the truth is that he was a murderer. Nevertheless, if they weren't telling the truth, they are put to death as well. So you can have Edim Zomamim put to death, and the murderer put to death. So even though the murderer really is a murderer, nevertheless, the Edim Zomamim are put to death. So that Mishnah is saying exactly what Rava is suggesting over here. He says, Seifa, Mach Enkein Bigmar Din, which isn't true by a Gmar Din, it's Trichole. That's what we need it for. Which is, that's only true by the case when there wasn't yet a Gmar Din. There already is a Gmar Din, then it would be different. If you look at Rashi here, Rashi says something which, it's very hard to understand what Rashi said. Rashi says over here, the reason that these Edim Zomamim are Chayavim in this case, is because when they came and testified, the murderer had yet to be brought to court and incriminated. So, in the end, if he is incriminated, he's going to be put to death. And what they said was not untrue. So why is that a big deal, Rashi says? Ve'ilu have ate umode have miftar. Because he came and admitted to it, he'd be patur. Amazing statement. We don't find anything like that in the entire Shas. As the Baalei Tosafot say, it makes it that you would never ever be put to death. Anytime a person thinks they're going to be brought up in charges that involve a death penalty, they just admit to it, and then they won't be put to death. We have a principle of modeh v'knas is patur, which we'll see upcoming in the Gemara, but with regards to modeh v'mita, we never find that modeh v'mita is patur. So it's very hard to understand what Rashi is saying. Seems almost like a borrowed language from knas, which isn't true by mita. Even later on, Rashi himself seems to sound like it's only true by knas, and not true by mita. And the Baalei Tosafot take the more mainstream approach that the Mishnayim use, which is, what does it mean over here that he's not a bar katila, that he's not a walking dead man? It's because it is possible, even if he is a murderer, that he will not be put to death. That is because, first of all, we need to make sure that all the facts are right over here. And so, until the person is found guilty, we don't assume he is a murderer. The person is assumed to be innocent, until found guilty. And that is because even if he is really guilty, the Edim will fail, because you have to do Rishot V'Chaki wrote on them. We also have a principle of Yitzilu Eidah that the court tries to save the murderer. People are on death row in these cases. So there are all sorts of reasons why, even if it's true that he is the murderer, he may not be put to death. And so therefore he's not considered to be a dead man or someone with a death warrant until the Beit Din itself declares him guilty. Even though we know he's a murderer in the end, and even though we have witnesses to that fact, all of that evidence still doesn't mean that he is a murderer until Beit Din actually paskins that he is a murderer. And so that's why over here, when they testify, even though the murder happened prior to their testimony, and this individual in the end is found guilty of murder, they are considered to be Edim Zomamim, because they did it at a time prior to the verdict that was rendered by the Beit Din. Bo Shnayim Amru. We need it for this part, which is the other half of Rava's din, which is that if individuals come and say that on Sunday, the Gemara din, the verdict of this individual was reached, he was incriminated by Beit Din, and the verdict was rendered that he was going to be put to death. How could you say that? You were with us on Sunday. How could you have been at this case? And how could you testify about this case? Ella, Be'erev Shabbat, Nigmar Dino, Shel Ploni. But, even though you are Edim Zomamim, nevertheless, what you said happens to be true, it just was the case was on Friday, and not on Sunday. V'lo'od, Ella, Afilo Amru, Betrei B'Shabta, Nigmar Dino, Shel Ploni. Even if on Monday they said that that was the case, Ein Elu Ne'aragim, Edim Zomamim are not put to death in that case. The Be'idna, the Kamasade, Gabra Bar Katolahu. The time that they're testifying, he was already a dead man. Once Beit Din reaches the verdict that he is guilty and that he's going to be put to death, then he's basically on death row, or he's considered to be a walking dead man. Given that, if they come and testify that on Sunday there was that he was found guilty on Sunday, and that happens to be not true because they were with these individuals on Sunday, could have seen it, but nevertheless, it was true about Friday. That means prior to their testimony, the individual was already found guilty in court. So when they're testifying to a person who's a walking dead man. And what the Gemara says that is even if it was on Monday, they come to court on Tuesday and say that it happened on Sunday, and the other 18 people say you couldn't have been because you were with us on Sunday, but on Monday he was found guilty in court. Because on Tuesday when they did come, he was already considered a dead man. Their testimony that happened on Sunday doesn't make a difference because he's already a dead man. So even though it happened after they said it, but because their testimony or the court case is taking place after any of these times, he's considered to be a gavra bar katoluhu. Chayn le'inyan tashlumei kenas. Similar is the case by kenas, by fines. Now over here, Rashi's statement about mita will be very relevant, which is, that on Sunday he stole, then he shechted it or sold it, so he's now chayav arba b'chamisha. That you can't be testifying about this case because you were with us on Sunday. But in reality, he did do that, which you said, but it was done on Monday. Mishamim. Then they have to pay. Even if the Edim say that it happened on Friday, prior to when these individuals said it, ganav v'tavach u'machar, and he stole and then shechted it or sold it, mishamim, they pay for it because arba v'chamisha is a knas, because it exceeds the damage that this individual did or the theft that they had undertaken, and that's considered to be a knas. Because when you're testifying, this individual was not yet chayav, the monetary obligation. So now, Bali Tosafot over here say, and everybody agrees to this, which is, aval vadai l'inyan mamon lo. That this is true by knas, and it's not true by mamon. The main difference being, as Rashi notes over here, is that you can be mode b'knas. If you come along and testify against this individual, then your time that you do it, you now make him guilty, and take away his ability or his opportunity to be mode b'knas. So even though the crime took place on Friday, and you said it happened on Sunday, your testimony about Sunday, so it's post the crime, nevertheless, he has a right to be mode b'knas, and be patur if he's mode before Edim come and testify about what he did or about the crime. And so though, even though you're post the crime, your pre is being incriminated and beaten. By monetary matters, that's not the case. So it explains over here, the difference between them is, the chol kama delo nigmar dino, as long as there's not a gedere demo, but mamona be karol de vadai shevoe de veedu. By monetary matters, it's nearly 100%, or that it is a given that Edim will come and testify. Aval beidot nefashot, beidina drisha vachikira, as vadai aminim de kodim shnigmar do, lav avi bar chiyuva. As opposed to dinin nefashot, where we're not certain that the Edim will be found okay, or that you can testify against him, because there's a requirement for drisha v'chakira, and all sorts of other requirements that may not come out or come to fruition that he'll be found guilty. So Tosfot says it's really a practical consideration as to whether we can reach a verdict. By monetary matters, we're going to reach a verdict. By dinin nefashot, it's possible we won't reach a verdict. Now, Rabbi Akiva Eger, commenting on this Tosfot, brings a chakira, which he says is the simple way to understand this. And this is something we discussed in the Gemara in Baba Batra, as to the difference between a knas and a monetary obligation. And he says, I don't know why Tosafot went through all this trouble to say that by dinin nefashot, it's more difficult, it's less likely we'll come to a verdict, versus dinin mamonot, which is almost a given, then we'll get to a verdict, you always will find a deem about it. Rabbi Akiva Eger says there's a much more fundamental difference between knas and mamon. And that is, with regards to knas, knas is something that is not obvious or inherent to the act of the individual. A knas is a fine, and a fine must be imposed by Beit Din. Since the fine has nothing to do with the event or the losses that were caused over here, the only way you could be chayav for a fine is if Beit Din says you are guilty. And once they determine that you're guilty, then you're now obligated in the knas. On the other hand, when it comes to monetary obligations, even before you get to Beit Din, the individual is chayav that monetary payment. So that means, for instance, if the person was to admit to the fact that he was chayav a knas, we know that modeh b'knas is patur. The other hand, if he admits to the fact that he has a monetary obligation, he would have to make compensation for that because hodat baldin gemei din dami, and then he would have to pay. That's one difference between them that highlights this issue, as well as the fact that if the person knows they are chayav, then he would have to pay based on the fact that he knows that he owes the money. If he knows he stole on Friday, then he has an obligation to pay. On the other hand, if he knows that he stole and there was tavach machar, while the underlying gneva, he knows he has to pay, the tavach machar that adds on the arba v'chamisha, which is a fine imposed by the Torah, he doesn't have any obligation to go and pay that voluntarily before Beit Din finds him guilty. Or in essence, the chakira is that a knas is something that is imposed by Beit Din. The knas doesn't exist until the Beit Din gives a verdict that you are chayav. A monetary obligation exists from the moment that either you damage the other person's property, you took their money, stole from them, that obligation exists right away. And for that reason, Rabbi Kiva Eger says there's a fundamental difference between knas and mamon, or dinei nefashot and mamon. Again, even if a person knows that they murdered, it doesn't mean that they have to go and kill themselves. Doesn't mean that they have to self-inflict whatever punishment it is. The only way that we put to death is if procedurally Beit Din figures out that they are chayav and they are murderers. Again, even if they admit to being a murderer, it doesn't change the fact that Beit Din needs the procedural issues to be taken care of before they can put this person to death. Admission won't bring it to him. So it's only the psak of Beit Din that makes him into a murderer. It is not simply because he murdered that now he is a walking dead man. So that's a big difference between murder, knas, and all these other cases, corporal punishment, versus mamon, where the obligation is inherent from the moment that the person either did the damage, stole, or took the money. And for that reason, you'll have this difference, which is that all these cases, you'll have this, that if they come and testify, even what they're saying is true, and it was true before the time period they testified about, they'll still be considered edim zomim. The exception that it will be mamon. If they testify that on Sunday, this person stole the money, and the other one, he didn't come along and say, Imanu Aitim, you're with us, but he did steal on Friday, then they will not be considered Edim Zomimim, because the guy on Friday already had a monetary obligation. And so when they testified about it, they testified about a loss that already existed, or something that he was obligated to pay, irrespective of their testimony. Now, Bo Shtayim Amru, B'chab Shabto Ganav Tavach Umachar, that on Sunday he stole, then did Tzvichal Mechira, V'nigmar Dino, and the verdict was rendered in court. You are with us on Sunday. Ella, Erev Shabbat, Ganav Matavach Umachar, V'nigmar Dino. So even though you were with us on Sunday, so you can't be testifying about this, but nevertheless, what you said is true, because on Friday, this person did steal, and was Tovech Umachar, and Beit Din found him guilty on Friday. Blood. Ella, Filo Amru, here the Gemara Gersa so we have is B'chad B'Shabta on Sunday, but if it's in parallel with all the cases before, we would be on, even if they say it was on Monday. It's after the time period that they said, Ganav, Tavach, Umachar, he stole it, shechted it, or sold it. Ubetrei b'shabto, nigmar dino. And on that Monday, they came to a verdict that he was guilty. Ein mishalmim. They don't have to pay. The be'idna, the kamasade. When they come on Tuesday and are testifying, gavra bar tashlumimu. He was already obligated by the court to pay. And since he was obligated by the court to pay, even though they are lying, but what they lied about wasn't an incremental loss to him. He already, that loss existed, or that obligation to pay already existed, irrespective of their testimony. Alright, so now, Rabbi Yehuda Omer istatit yuzo, so that we saw in the Mishnah, he thinks that this is all a plot just to eliminate any deem in the case and protect the party that is being incriminated. He istatit yuzo, apiu karishuna nami lo. If it is all a falsehood, or this is considered to be a problem, then why do we kill the first set of Edim? If you think they're lying, we should think they're lying about everybody they spoke about, not just about the ones after the first case. You're right that on the first ones, we are not determined to be a cabal of plotters because we didn't know until they started doing this to everybody. But once we do know, that should protect anybody they testified about. So it says, Amarimbo, Shikadmuba, Argu. We already killed the first set of Edim based on their testimony, so we can't retract it. So Gemara says, wait a minute. What happened. Why is the Mishnah say, chutz mikat rishona, with the exception of the first cut? Of course, with the exception of the first cut. The first cut's dead. So there's, of course, they're the exception to the rule. You can't take back them being dead. If there's only one cut, then they're put to death. If there are more than one, then they're not killed. Where it says, wait a minute, that's nice, that might be true, but she's basically saying that if they only incriminate one set of Edim, then those Edim are put to death. If they do this to multiple sets of Edim, then none of the supposed Edim Zomimim are put to death. The problem is, HaBilvad Kamar, the Mishnah says, El HaKat Rishonah Bilvad, only the Kat Rishonah is spared. When you use that language, that implies that they're not the only Kat. They're the only Kat that's put to death, implying that there are other Kitei Edim there. So for Rava to say the case where they're put to death is in a case where they're the only Kat. What do you mean? It says that they're not the only Kat in the Mishnah. The language does not support that explanation. Kasha. Gemara leaves it as a question. The problem is that the Mishnah is not understandable except in the way that Rava explains it. The language is not supportive of what Rava is saying, but logically it makes sense what Rava is saying. Well, he said, as a kasha, as they had to deal with the Mishnah, despite the fact that they think that Rava's statement is correct over here. Hayitita, date sade, this woman brought edim, vishtakur, and they were found to be lying, or found to be false edim. Aite sade, she brought another set of edim, vishtakur, and they were also found to be lying. Azla, aite sade achrine, she brings a third set of edim to testify on her behalf. And they're not found to be liars. Question is, do we believe them? She already has established a pattern of bringing in false Edim. And the question is now, once she finally brings a set of Edim in that we don't find to be false, are they really not false? Or can we, through the circumstantial evidence, assume over here that she's just bringing in one set after the next, hoping that one of them will stick, but not necessarily that they're telling the truth? Amarish Lokish, Huksukazo. This woman already has established a pattern of bringing false Edim. Therefore, we're not going to even believe the last set of Edim that come in. She already brought two, and now it's three. We do find in some places, Machloket, Tanaim, between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel as to whether two or three are considered to be a chazaka. But there are places where everyone agrees that two is enough. But just the idea here being that there's a pattern, I don't know if this is a halachic chazaka, but she already has a pattern of doing this. And so we're not going to believe the last set of Edim. Amar le Rabbi Lazar, im I chuksaka, kol Yisrael, mi chuskugu? Wait a minute, she might be a dishonest person. That doesn't mean that everybody who shows up in court is also dishonest. She might be willing to go out and hire eight sets of Edim after sets of Edim, but who says that people in general are dishonest like her, and that they are actually going to follow through with her encouragement or her payment for them to lie? So there, according to him, the third cat should be believed, not because we believe her, but because we can't assume that everybody who shows up in court is a liar because they're associated with this case. And so there's two different issues. One is she might be problematic, but that doesn't mean every set of Edim that shows up is problematic. Zimnin, Abiyotve, Kameh, Rabbi Yochanan. So at some point, this took place in front of Rabbi Yochanan. It's at a later date. Right here we have a machlok between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Elazar. Reish Lakish is a Talmid Chaver of Rabbi Yochanan, and so is Rabbi Elazar, a Talmid Chaver of Rabbi Yochanan. Although Rabbi Elazar is much more of a Talmid than Reish Lakish. So now they had this machloket, but then another time this case happened in front of Rabbi Yochanan. Ata ki hai maiseh lekamayu. This case showed up there. Am Reish Lakish chusta gazo. Reish Lakish gave his opinion again, like he had said it before, which is that this woman already, she's established a pattern of bringing false Edim. We're not going to believe the third set. Just because she is problematic doesn't mean that every set of Edim that shows up here is problematic. Then Reish Lakish looked at Rabbi Lazar in a unpleasant manner. He was upset at him. Amar lei, and he explains why he's upset. Shmat mile mi bar nafka. You heard this from Rabbi Yochanan. Bar nafka, as we saw in Perka Chelek, is a reference to Rabbi Yochanan. Either because his father was a nafka, that his father was a blacksmith, and so he was known as the bar nafka. Or possibly bar nafka is a reference to him, that that was his profession. It was called a bar nafka. In Sanhedrin, Rashi brought an alternate explanation, which was, bar nafka was about the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan. We know that Rabbi Yochanan was extremely good-looking. That's the whole story in Bava Metzia about Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, as well as the stories in the Gemara in Brachot, that he used to sit outside of the mikveh so the women would see him and have wonderful, beautiful children like him, and other stories that we have in Shas, and statements of the Shas that he was beautiful. And bar nafka is either a Lashon Sagid Nahor, the black one, which was the opposite of that, meaning that he was really beautiful. Or Rashi brings bar nafka is that just like the blackness of the Kushi is obvious, so too the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan was obvious. So it's a reference to Rabbi Yochanan. Lo amart li mishmei, and you, Rabbi Lazar, didn't say over in his name. Reish Lakish was upset at Rabbi Lazar, not because Rabbi Lazar had a difference in opinion than Reish Lakish, but Rabbi Lazar's opinion stemmed from Rabbi Yochanan. And he said, why didn't you tell me it was Rabbi Yochanan and not your Svaro? Because had he known it was Rabbi Yochanan, he may not have argued on him. That's his Rebbe, or he's much more of a peer to him than Rabbi Elazar. And he might have rescinded or retracted his position. Or, when he came in front of Rabbi Yochanan, he wouldn't have necessarily argued this way, because he knew Rabbi Yochanan was going to dissent. But he was basically upset at him for not saying it over in the name of his Rebbe, if he heard it from his Rebbe. The question is, why didn't Rabbi Elazar do this? One possibility is that he thought of it on his own, and then he heard it from Rabbi Yochanan. The other possibility is that we find in other places in Shas, the Gemara brings this as an example with regards to Yoshua, which is that Rabbi Elazar was a Talmud Muvak of Rabbi Yochanan, and so when he said things over, he was automatically assumed to be saying them over in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, because that's where he got his old Torah from. One time Rabbi Yochanan actually got upset at him, that he didn't quote it in his name, and I forgot who it is, brought a mashal there and said, it's just like Yoshua ben Nun. Yoshua ben Nun didn't say every time he said something, I heard from Moshe, or Moshe said, he just said it. And everybody knew he knew it from Moshe because he was a Talmud Mufak of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the only place he could have learned it from. And so it was an underlying assumption that it came from Moshe Rabbeinu, and same thing with Rabbi Lazar. Anything he said, you could assume came from Yochanan, and therefore he didn't explicitly say it because it was a well-known fact. Lema Reish Lakish to Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Let's say this machlok between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan is actually similar to the machlok of Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama in our Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan to Amar Rabbanan, and Rabbi Yochanan was like the Rabbanan. Remember, Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah says when you have one set of Edim that are making everyone into Edim Zomimim, we stop believing them. And Reish Lakish says the same thing over here. A woman who keeps bringing sets of Edim, we don't believe the sets after a certain time, we don't believe her anymore. And Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, says, that doesn't matter. The fact that she's problematic doesn't mean the Edim are problematic. Similar to the Rabbanan who say that if these Edim come along and say, Imanoitim, Imanoitim, we believe them. There's no reason not to believe them, even though it seems implausible. But as long as they're testifying in a proper manner, we don't assume that they are lying. That's what the Gemara is saying. Let us align their positions. Amalekha Reish Lakish, Anamre Afacha Afilu Rabbanan. I can even hold like the Rabbanan. I don't have to hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Adkan lo kamre Rabbanan otam. The Lekha Kadamahad there. Only reason that they're abundant over there, say that, is because there's nobody there who's trying to bring in these Edim in order to incriminate everybody else. Of a Hocha, Ikad the Kamahadra. Over here, there's someone who's trying to bring in the people. The difference in the case is that here, the woman is trying to bring in Edim. And she's bringing in one set after the next. So someone's out there looking for false Edim, basically. So in that case, you would say that we don't believe the extra set of Edim that come in. On the other hand, by the case of Edim Zomimim, nobody's doing anything. These Edim are just saying, Imanoitim, Imanoitim, Imanoitim. They're not being encouraged by anybody. They're not being told by anybody to do this. They're doing this of their own volition. So that's different. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Lecha Ana Damri Afilu Rabbi Yehuda. Yochanan says, I can even fit into the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Ad Kan Lo Kama Rabbi Yehuda Hatam Damrinin Ate Kuli Alma Gabi Hane Havu Kaime. What are you going to tell me, that the whole world was together with these two Edim, that I can say Imano Edim for everybody? Over here it's possible that these Edim don't know the testimony, and the other Edim were present and do know the testimony. Here it's plausible that you have edim that weren't there and edim that were there. In that case, when they say Yimanu eat them to 100 sets of edim, it's very unlikely that all those sets of edim were together with them. Unless, like you suggested, they were at a conference for some other reason. But without that, absent that, it would be a little bit far-fetched to suggest that they would have known all this information. Now we start the next Mishnah. Eina edim zomimim neragim ashigmar adin. Edim zomimim cannot be found to be edim zomimim until after the verdict of Beit Din has been rendered. Shedstukim omrim ashirim. Until the victim is killed. The Stukim believe that it's only if they falsely testify and then their testimony is accepted, and then the Beit Din carries out the execution based on their testimony, then according to the Tzukim, you'd be chayav as edim zomimim. On the other hand, for the Chachamim, the Prushim, the limud is that only after the Gmar Din, but before the execution, before the punishment is actually carried out. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, nefesh bin nefesh. So the Tzdukim rest their position on the fact that in the Parshia of Edim Zomimim, it ends over there that nefesh b'nefesh. You take a soul for a soul, which makes it sound like because the victim that you falsely accused was killed, so now because his nefesh was lost, now you lose your nefesh, which makes it sound that the execution was actually carried out. Amar lahem chachamim, halo kvar nemar. Doesn't the pasuk state the problem as Basitim lo kasher zamam lasot le'achiv, that you do to them like they plan to do to their brother. Bar achiv kayam. The word achiv means that he's still alive. So there are different ways to deal with this. Some suggest that inherently the word achiv, that he's your brother, implies that he's still your brother. And if he's still your brother, that means that he is alive. So you only punish them for what they wanted to do to their brother who's still alive, but not to someone who's dead, because then he's no longer your brother. Others suggest that the word achiv is even used after death, and the main focus of the Chachamim is not on the word achiv, but rather on kasher zamam, like they planned, and not kasher asa, like they did. So then why does it use the terminology nefesh b'nefesh if it's not after the death of the victim? You might have thought that from the moment they come to testify, they could be made into Edim Zomimim. Then they'll be put to death for testifying. Nefesh b'nefesh, ha'ina ne'argim achiv maradin. So that teaches you that they are not found to be guilty until after there is a Gmar Din. So there is a small window of time when they can be made into Edim Zomimim. If they're found out prior to the Gmar Din, the verdict of Beit Din, they're not Edim Zomimim. If they're found out after the execution of Beit Din, they're also not considered to be Edim Zomimim. The only time that they are Edim Zomimim is they are caught between the verdict and the execution. Between the verdict and the carrying out of the verdict, that's when they can be incriminated as Edim Zomimim during that small window. And that's because it says Kosher Zamam, like they planned, but it also says Nefesh B'Nefesh, where the person was already dead. Well, not literally dead, but he was dead because there was a verdict of Beit Din. So it has to be in that small window between the verdict and the execution. Tani Beribi Omer. So we have a bright Beribi. Beribi can either mean an important person in the generation. Rashi over here claims that it's name of a Tana. Omer lo harugo neragim. If the victim was not killed, then they're put to death. Harugo, they killed the victim, a neragim. Then they are not put to death. As to what is the logic that we say kasher zaman below kasher asa, there are rishonim like the Ritva that just rely on our Mishnah. The Mishnah just told us because it says vasitim lo kasher zaman lasod achiv, and that is the reason why it's kasher zaman below kasher asa. Now then, the Rambam says that's midivrei Kabbalah, that there is some sort of misorah that we have that it's only true by kasher zaman and not kasher asa. Others suggest that the problem is that when it's kasher asa, the crime is too great for any atonement to be done by a Beit Din. When it's kasher zamam, then that punishment could rectify what you did wrong. But in the case where you both lied, and now you caused someone to be killed in that scenario, there you can't earn atonement with Beit Din Shomato. The Ramban of the Torah actually has an interesting perspective on it, and that is that when it comes to a Beit Din, we assume that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is found with the Beit Din. That's why the word Elohim for a Dayan is also used with Elohim for God, because God is present in the Beit Din. And that means that if someone was killed by the Beit Din, even though they shouldn't have been killed based on the testimony of these individuals, it must be that Hashem wanted this person to be killed. And since they were killed, then that was, quote-unquote, Hashem's will. So therefore, once it's done, we're not going to go after the Edim at that point in time. It's a very, very interesting approach of the Ramban to this discussion about Kasher Zaman v'lo Kasher Asa. Amar Aviv, so the father of Rivi says, B'ni, lav kal v'chomeru, isn't it just the opposite logically? Amar lo, limatanu rabbeinu, shenun shim min adin. Our Rebbe taught us, or if he's speaking to his father, maybe you, my father, my Rebbe, you taught us that you're not allowed to punish based on a logical argument, based on a kal v'chomer. Titania, ish asher yikachet achoto batavivu batimo. A person, this is found in Parshat Kedoshim, the punishment for Arayot. It says a person who takes his sister, who is a sister through a common father, or a sister through a common mother, in li'ala bataviv shlo batimo, batimo shlo bataviv. The pasuk only describes a half-brother or sister relationship where one of the parents is common to them. Bat imo ubat aviv minayin. How do we know if she's a full-fledged sister that they're subject to the same punishment? Tamal Omar, ervat achoto gila. The pasuk says that his sister he had a rayot with. So there's a separate pasuk that deals with achoto, who is his full-fledged sister. So Achil Omar, yesh li bedin. Before you need a pasuk, why don't you just do it through a logical argument? Imanash shabbat aviv shlo batimo, ubatimo shlo bat aviv. The Torah punishes you for a half-sister, whether it's through your mother or your father, bat aviv batimo, then a full-fledged sister, certainly you should get punished for. Lo kol shekein, isn't it a kal v'chomer that you should be punished? Halamarata, the fact that the Torah went out of its way to teach you, even though you could have learned it logically, it still tells you about a full-fledged sister. She'ain on shim and adin. From here you see that you don't punish through logical arguments through a kal v'chomer. Onesh shamanu. That's true about punishments. Azara minayin. How do we know that you can't also extract an azara, meaning that the azara that leads to the onesh, or whether it's an azara that would lead to malkot minayin? How do I know there that you can't learn it out of a logical argument? Tama Bomar by Parshat Achrayimot, where it tells you what's restricted in the arayot. It says, ervat achotcha bat avicha ubat imecha, the erva of your sister, either through your father or through your mother, meaning a half-sister. It's only true when she's a half-sister, whether it's through the mother or whether it's through the father. Bataviv ubatimo, if it's a full-fledged sister, minayin. How do we know there that it's restricted? Talmud Lomar, the pasuk says, ervat bat eshet avicha, moledet avicha achot chayi. There's another pasuk that says, a daughter of your father's wife, who's also a born of your father, meaning a full-fledged sister, achot chayi. Achilo Yomar, had the pasuk not told us about a full-fledged sister, yesh li min adin, I could have learned it from a kal v'chomer. My muzara batimo shlo bat aviv, if he's restricted in his half-sister through his mother, bat aviv shlo batimo, or his half-sister through his father, bat aviv batimo, full-fledged sister, lo kol shekein, it should be certain. If you're chayav for a half-sister, no matter whether it comes from the mother and the father, then when it's a full-fledged sister, you have both of them together. You should definitely be restricted. Halamato, the fact that the pasuk went out of its way to teach you that, you learn from that, she'en mazirim min adin, that we do not give a punishment through a kal v'chomer, just like by onesh, we don't give it through a kal v'chomer. Now the Gemara continues and says, chayve malkiot minayin. Here you have two approaches within the Rishonim to discuss what is going on in the Gemara. Some see this as a continuation of the previous Gemara, which means that just like you can't learn these items out of a kal v'chomer, so too with the upcoming items. Rashi, on the other hand, sees this connecting back to the Mishnah and saying, how do we know that by the Mishnah, where it says that you have to wait, Edim Zomimim are only made into Edim Zomimim, post the Gemara Din, and not after Kasher Asah, when the execution was already done? How do we know that? So Rashi sees that referencing back to the din of the Mishnah, which is Chayve Malkiot Minayin. Tamalomar, Rasha, Rasha, is the same Zereshava that we started out the daf with, which is a Zereshava between Mita and Malkiot. So for those that think that we're speaking about the continuation of this Gemara, it means just like by Mita, you can't be Onesh Minadin and Azara Minadin. So do by Malkiot, there's no Azara Minadin. those like Rashi thing and referencing to the Mishnah, just like in the Mishnah we learned from Nefesh B'Nefesh that has to be post the Gemar Din, so too by Malkiot that have to be post the Gemar Din. Chayve Galiot Minayin, how do we know about Galut? And again, the same question for the Rishonim as to whether it's about the previous Gemara or the Mishnah. How do we know it applies there? Acher Rotzeach, Rotzeach. We have Gzeres Shavah, Rotzeach, Rotzeach, which is because it says by a person who kills Bishogei, V'kritim Lechem Arim, Arim Miklatiena Lechem, V'nashama Rotzeach, Makeh Nefesh Bishkaga. It says by a Rotzeach V'mezir, O Beivai Yikau B'yado, V'yamot, Mot Yumata Makeh, Rotzeachu, Gol Adam Yumit, Eta Rotzeach B'figo Bo. So you see the terminology Rotzeach is used both by killing by Mezid and killing by Shogei. And so that Gzeres Shavah allows us to learn whatever din is true by the Mezid is true by the Shogeg as well. And as Rashi notes over here, we're not speaking about the punishment for our Chiyuvei Galiot, because as we noted already in the previous Mishnayot, Eidim Zalmamim by Galut get Malkot and don't get Galiot. So that should have been subsumed under Malkot from the previous Gzeres Shavah of the Gemara. So Rashi is saying we're not speaking about the outcome or the punishment, we're speaking about the case itself. By a case of Chiyuvei Galiot, what is the story? So there again, we have a Gzeres Shavah that connects it to Mita that tells us Chiyuvei Galiot also have the same requirement to be post the Gemar Din before the execution of the sentence. Or, for the other Rishonim, it means that also we are not on Shin Min Adin with regards to Chiyuvei Galiot. Tanya, Amar Rav Yehuda ben Tabai, Ere'eh ben Nechama, Im Lo Harakti Eid Zomeim, Lo Tzim Miliban Shel Tzdukim. If I did not kill an Eid Zomeim in order to dispel the reasoning of the Tzdukim, I executed an individual because I wanted to dispel the view of the Tzdukim. Now, Erev Nechama is a difficult Lashon because it sounds like it's a Lashon Shvuah, but it's a positive statement, which is Erev Nechama. I will see the redemption of Yerushalayim or the consolation of Yerushalayim in the time of Mashiach. So Rashi brings one of two explanations for Erev Nechama, is that either it's a Lashon Tzagi Nahor, which is Lo Erev Nechama. I won't see in the Nechama if what I did is not right or was not true. He's saying a Shvua that he actually did this. And he's saying if this is not the truth, then Lo Erev Nechama. That's one way to learn it. Or the other possibility is that it's actually a Shvua, which is Erev Nechama, that my children will pass away and I'll have to be consoled over my children. And that's what it means, Erev Nechama, that that's a bad thing that will happen if what I'm telling you is not true. So that's what he's saying. Erev Nechama lo harakti eid zomeim, lo tzim miliban shel tzdukim, sheyomrim, ein eidim zomemim neharagim, ad sheyareg hanidon. They say that the eidim zomemim are not put to death until the victim is actually put to death in that case. Amar lo Shimon ben Shetach, Erev Nechama. So Shimon ben Shetach, though, if you look in the beginning of Mishnayot in Avot, is the Zug, the Ben Zug of Yehuda ben Tabai. That Shimon Shetach for Yehuda ben Tabai, which means that one of them was the Nasi and one was the Beit Din. He says about this, Amarim lo shafachta dam naki. If you did not kill an innocent person, Shereyamru chachamim, the chachamim say, I mean it's an explicit Mishnah, ein eidim zomemim neragim, al shizum u'shnehem. An eidim zomemim cannot be made into eidim zomemim until the entire cot is made into eidim zomemim. Vein lokim al shizum u'shnehem. And they also don't get Malkot until all of them are found guilty of being Eidim Zomemim. If you have two Eidim, or possibly even three Eidim, and only one of them is found to be an Eidim Zomemim, then, yes, the testimony is Pasul, but that does not make them into Eidim Zomemim. So how over here did you make one Eid into an Eidim Zomemim? Where is the other guy? It's either they're both Eidim Zomemim, or neither of them are Eidim Zomemim. So how did you kill just one Eid? That is impossible, and it's even explicit Mishnah. Miyad kibel alav Yehuda ben Tabai, sheno moreho ra, elotnei Shimon ben Shetach. From there to forward, Yehuda ben Tabai accepted by himself that he would not adjudicate cases unless he was in the presence of Shimon ben Shetach. V'chol yamav shel Rav Yehuda ben Tabai, haya mishtateach al kibro shel oto ha'eid. He would go and prostrate himself on the kever, the grave, of this aid that he put to death improperly. V'ya kolo nishma. And they used to hear his voice calling out from the cemetery. Uksvuriam lomar, the people thought, kolo shel harug. It was the voice of the victim, the person, the aid that he had put to death. It was his voice that they were hearing from the cemetery. Who else calls out from the cemetery? There aren't live people in the cemetery, only dead people. So it was this dead aid that was calling out. Amar koli shelihu. Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai said it was my voice, because he knew that he was going there all the time, and prostrating and davening that he should be forgiven. And he was the one making the noise. Teidu, and I'll prove it to you. L'machar, who mate? He's speaking in a third person, but he's speaking about himself, which is, tomorrow he will die. In kolo nishma. And then you won't hear the voice anymore. That when I pass away, the voice will stop. And sure enough, when he passed away, the voice stopped. Amalei Ravacha, Brei the Rabbah, the Ravashi, Dilma Bedina, Kambadei, Inami Pius Paisei. How do you know that the voice stopped because Yehuda ben Tabai was the one crying? Or maybe it was that he got up to heaven and he had a din with him and they brought him to trial over this issue. Or he went and appeased the individual up in Shemayim. And that's why he wasn't angry anymore, so he stopped calling out. Just because he died isn't a proof that the voice stopped because he was the one making the noise. Might be that he now got in touch with the guy who had passed away and he was able to stop him from crying. So there's no evidence from the fact that the crying stopped that he was the one that was crying. First of all, you see from this the great lengths or efforts that a person has to go to when they've wronged someone to seek or search forgiveness. That means not only when they're alive, but even after they've passed away, a person should try to appease or get forgiveness from the individual. Number two is, you see how careful one has to be about making decisions on their own and not making sure that they have others to help them out in these cases. But you do have to ask here, what was Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai thinking when he did this? Shimon Shetach quotes the Rema Mishnah. So we know that Yehuda ben Tabai was doing something that was extrajudicial because he said he was doing it intentionally in order to take away from the Liban Shel Tzduchim. So Yehuda ben Tabai obviously thought it was valuable to do this, despite the fact that it might have been wrong. So either that's because he believed that this aid was Chayav Mitah for a different reason, and so he just put him to death for this in order to stand as an example for the Tzduchim, and he did it in a public way, because Aidim Zomamim are always publicized. Or he did this extrajudicially because he wanted to prove his point. And we find many times, Beit Din, Unshinu Makin, Shalom Min Adin. And what Shimon Shetach comes to say to him is, that's true when you're not killing someone. But if you're killing someone, we don't take extrajudicial actions in that case to kill someone in a public manner when it's just not the case, when it's not halachically condoned in these cases. And so therefore, even though you were trying to do something that was, quote unquote, a tikkun, you can't do it with the life of someone else when they're not deserving of death. You can do that with other types of punishments, but death is not one of those options where you can act on your own volition, even though you're trying to defend the position of the Torah. We'll read the next Mishnah. It's a Mishnah that we actually bumped into in Sanhedrin, as well as we quoted it in the Rashbam in Baba Batra. And over there, there was a machloket about how to understand Rabbi Kiva's position. And we'll discuss that again here. It says that a person will be put to death by either two or three edim. If you can put the person to death with a set of two edim, then why does the Torah have to say you can use three? Obviously, if two are enough, then three will, of course, suffice. It's connect two to three. Ma shlosha mezimim et hashnayim. Just like a set of three edim can make a set of two edim into edim zomamim, af hashnayim yuzumu et hagimel. So too, a set of two edim can make a set of three edim into edim zomamim. Uminayin afilu meya. How do I know you can even do this, even with 100 edim in one kat and two edim in another kat? Tamalomar edim. The pasuk says edim, which is a plurality, and then it seems to be irrelevant how many you have. So it's alpish shnayim edim oshlosha edim. So the word edim is used twice, which would have been unnecessary. You could say alpish shnayim oshlosha edim. In fact, it's edim is extraneous, and edim is a plurality. Now, the Balei Tosafot do ask then, okay, if it's a plurality, then why don't you just say that it is four? You have two, three, and then you've got on four. So the Balei Tosafot indicate that once you've done two, three, even though four would be the next logical step, all it's showing you is that numbers are irrelevant over here. The size of the Kat Edim makes no difference as long as you're a unit. That unit can incriminate another unit, or vice versa. The other unit can incriminate this unit. And that's what we're being told by the Pasuk. Shimon says that just like two individuals cannot be put to death unless both of them are found to be eating zomamim. That's what Shimon ben Shetach said to Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai, why he was wrong. So too, by three, they are not considered to be edim zomamim until all three of them are found to be edim zomamim. How do we know that's true if you have 100 edim in this cut? Edim, tamalomar edim, in the plurality. And so there, Rabbi Shimon says that this is a kula. It just like you have to incriminate all the edim when it's two, so too by three, you have to incriminate all the edim in order for them to be edim zomamim. If you only do it for one or two, then yes, they do be disqualified, but they won't be made into edim zomamim. Now, Rabbi Akiva Omer, lo bash lishi lakel, el achmir alav. The third one does not come to be a kula, but rather to be a chumra. V'lasot dino piyotzim elu, to make his din just like their din. Imkein anasha gadub l'nitfal ovrei avera. If this is the way that the Torah punishes people who join and people who are doing the wrong thing, he's treated just like the violators themselves. So he certainly will give reward to those that join, those that are doing the right thing, and they will get a reward as if they are doing that right thing. What Rabbi Akiva is suggesting is that here, when you have two edim, they were sufficient to be the edut. When the third aid comes and joins them, he's not necessary for the edut. So now that he joined them, he is going to suffer the consequences of joining this group, even though he was not necessary for the group. And so Rabbi Akiva said, just like that third person is going to be hurt by joining these Ovei Avera, and certainly people who join, people who are doing the right thing, then certainly they'll be rewarded as if they are doing the right thing. As Rashi notes of here, and later on in the Masechta and Chav Gimel, that's because Midah Tova is Merubah Midah Ra'ah. That when Hashem bestows good, it's always far in excess of when He bestows bad. He bases it on the Pasuk that says, Oseh Chesed Alafim, which is 2,000. And then it says, with regards to Parnut, it says, Al Shileshim B'Aribayim, to the third and fourth generation. So by good, it says 2,000 generations, or it means forever, or 2,000. And by bad, it says He'll punish Al Shileshim B'Aribayim, until the third or fourth generation. You take 2,000 divided by 4, then good is 500 times as good as the bad. And that's what Rabbi Akiva is referencing. Over here you have a major machloket in the Rishonim as to whether Rabbi Akiva agrees to Rabbi Shimon as adding on top of Rabbi Shimon, or is Rabbi Akiva argue with Rabbi Shimon. So now, if he takes or accepts the position of Rabbi Shimon, then he agrees that the set of Edim cannot become Edim Zomamim until all of them are found to be Edim Zomamim. The only thing he is pointing out, which we'll see in the upcoming part of the Mishnah, is that if one of them is found to be problematic, he ruins it for everyone that's there. And so you see that even though this aid wasn't necessary to make the testimony work, nevertheless, when he's found to be a karov or pasul, he ruins it for everyone. So too, again, in the good side, the person joins, even though they weren't necessary, and the people are found to be doing the right thing, then he will also be credited with doing the right thing. So that's one way to view it. That Rabbi Akiva accepts Rabbi Shimon, and that's what we saw in Baba Batra with regards to the Rashbam, that he says that Rabbi Akiva is Rabbi Shimon plus. And that's what Rashi says in Sanhedrin, that it's Rabbi Akiva is Rabbi Shimon plus. On the other hand, there are many Rishonim, including the Baalei Tosafot there, that argue that Rabbi Akiva disagrees fundamentally with Rabbi Shimon. And that is, Rabbi Akiva believes that a set of Edim Zomamim can get punished even though the whole set was not found to be Edim Zomamim. Which way that goes is not clear over here. Does that mean that if you have three Edim and two of them are found to be Edim Zomamim, the third one is killed with them even though he wasn't found to be an Edim Zomamim? That's one possibility. Or it could be the other way around. The extra aid that came along, whether he is found to be an Edim Zomamim or whether he's not found to be an Edim Zomamim, the other two are killed. The Chumrah could either be that Rabbi Akiva says you don't need everybody to be incriminated, but if two of them are incriminated, they're made into Edim Zomamim and the third one just left. Whether he is or isn't doesn't matter. Or the other way around, which is that when you find two of them to Edim Zomamim, they're going to be punished. The third guy's going to be punished with them, even though he wasn't found to be an Edim Zomamim. And either way, that's what Rabbi Akiva says. Rabbi Shimon is the Hakel. That's not what this is for. This is the Hachmir. Rabbi Shimon is the Mekula, that you need everybody to be Edim Zomamim. I'm a Chumra, which says that I only need two of them to be Edim Zomamim. Either they'll be killed and the other guy will be spared, or even the other guy will go with them and be punished along with them. So that's what I mean, the Hachmir. And now the Rishonim The continuation of the Mishnah, they say, is also authored by Rabbi Akiva, which is, Umashnaim Nimsachamim Karoba Pasol Edutam Beteila. Just like by Sedevi Edim, if you find one of them to be a Karoba Pasol, the other one is Pasol as well, because now you don't have two Edim, you only have one Ed. Avshloshan Nimsachamim Karoba Pasol Edutam Beteila. So do by three, even if only one of them is found to be a Karoba Pasol, and you still have two Kosher Edim, nevertheless, he ruins it for the whole Kat. Minayin Afilu Me'ah, how do I know it applies him to 100? Tamalomar Edim in plural. And again, for some of the Rishonim, that might be the explanation of Rabbi Akiva's position. If he agrees to Rabbi Shimon, then what is his Chumra? His Chumra is that he found to be a Karoba Pasol. It affects everybody in the Kat. I'm Rabbi Yossi. But Med, Rabbi Yossi qualifies and says, when's that true? B'dinei Nefashot. That is in capital punishment. Above B'dinei Memonot, Titzkayim Ha'edut Bashar. We will break apart the Kat Edim, take out the person who's problematic, and the remaining Edim will testify then and extract money. So Rashi says the reason the difference is because by Dinei Fashot it says Ve'itzilu Eida, that you have an obligation to try to help the individual who is subject to the death penalty. So how do we help them? That if one of them is found to be Karba Pasul, make them all Psulim. By Dinei Fashot, but you don't have that imperative, then we don't do that and we just slice off the guy who's problematic and then we leave the Kosher Edim behind. The Bali Tosfot don't like that explanation, basically because of what goes on in the beginning of the Gemara in Sanhedrin, where the Bali Tosfot asks this more generically, which is we have a pasuk of Mishpat Echad Yelahem, that you have to have one Mishpat. That means that Dinei Nefashot equal Dinei Memonot. All the Dinei Nefashot apply to Dinei Memonot. So why would you distinguish over here in terms of Dinei Nefashot versus Dinei Memonot? So Tosfot says there is a difference, which is that by Dinei Nefashot, if you have two Edim, and one of them is found to be a Karoba Pasol, the other aid is useless, is meaningless. One aid by Dinei Fashot does absolutely nothing. So by a set of two Edim, if one is Karoba Pasol, the other one is a zero. So therefore, when you have three Edim, even though only one of them is gone and the other two could testify, we say that everything is wiped out. On the other hand, by Dinei Mimonot, if you have a set of Edim, and one of them is found to be a Karoba Pasol, the other aid still causes the individual to have to take a Shvuah. So that aid is still valuable, even though he doesn't have a partner anymore, because a single aid has impact by Dinei Memonot. And similarly, by three Edim, when one of them is found to be a Karoba Pasol, will excise him from the set, and will leave the other two Edim to testify by Dinei Memonot. And that's how Tosafot explains this view of Rabbi Yossi, that there's a difference between Dinei Fashot and Dinei Memonot. Rabbi Omer, Echad Dinei Memonot, Echad Dinei Fashot, like we said, by Tosafot suggests here, that there is no difference between Dinei Memonot and Dinei Fashot. Ve'imatai, when is that true? B'zman she'itru b'en. That's when they warned them. Alo z'man she'lo itru b'en. If they didn't warn them, ma yisu shne'achim sh'ra'u b'echad sh'ra'ged nefesh. What are you going to do about two brothers who happen to be witnesses to a murder? The only way they become a single set of Edim is if they both gave hatra'ah. They both intended to make themselves into Edim. Since they intended to make themselves into Edim, that's what joins them together to make them into a single Kat Edim. But if they don't intend to testify, then they can't be made into Edim, because otherwise you have a problem. If two brothers witness a murder, that means that nobody can testify in the case anymore. Everybody's considered to be a Pasul Eid. So what the Mishnah qualifies is it's only true when they want to be Edim. How they become Edim is actually a Machloket Rishonim. We saw this in Baba Batra, Machloket between the Rishbam and the Bali HaTosafot, as to whether a person becomes an aid by simply witnessing an event, and that the Bali HaTosafot reject because of our Mishnah over here, and say that witnessing itself cannot be the determining factor. And even if you say that the determining factor is whether they want to testify or don't want to testify, meaning, yes, it's not just about seeing it and witnessing it, but rather you have to intend to be a witness or not intend to be a witness, that's the view of the Rishbam. The Bali HaTosafot, on the other hand, say you're not an aid until you come to court to testify, meaning that even if you witness something, you only become an aid when you testify about that which you have seen. And that's the point where you become an aid, and that's what joins you together. In essence, they seemingly have a fundamental machlok between them, where the Rashbam says that what makes a person into a witness is witnessing. The fact that you saw something makes you into a witness. When you come to court, you're just articulating what made you into a witness. Then the Bali and the Tosafot say, seeing doesn't make you into a witness. Seeing means that you observe something. But you want to be a witness, then you need to testify or articulate about what you saw. That's what makes you into an aid. And that difference in their view of what makes you into, of how someone becomes a witness, influences how they view when there is a trigger point for making you into a kat. For the Rashbam, since you become a witness when you observe something, when you see it, then by definition, anybody who's seeing it together and intends to be a witness will be joined together. Then for the body of Tosfot, where you say seeing is just an observation, you become a witness when you articulate and present that which you've seen, then you only become a witness when you enter court, and that's when you become a single katedim, is when you actually come to court together in order to testify. And then we'll have other qualifications that the Gemara will speak about when they come to testify, what joins them together to be a single katedim. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on the top of Amud Aleph.